Personal Security Strategies.
Introduction. So, it appears there are plenty of hackers out there looking to steal your personal data and compromise your system. Great. What now? The answer is simple. Create a strategy to stay safe. With the increased attention paid to cybersecurity these days, this decision is a lot easier than it used to be. Even if you have an employer or workplace experts who worry over these things so you don't have to, there is still the matter of your own digital safety to think about. There are endless resources and suggestions about how to protect yourself online, and the time has come to put some of them into action. At this point, you understand the basics of cybersecurity and how online threats work, but do you have a firm sense of how to adjust your own behavior accordingly? If you learn something without actually implementing it, you're no better off. So the time is now to start thinking realistically about how you can take charge of your own security in the virtual world and how you can continue to move around, communicate, share, and enjoy its many pleasures with complete confidence. Protecting yourself. The first step in self-protection involves looking critically at your own behavior and lifestyle. As you've learned, it's not just about guarding against malicious outside forces. It's also about looking at the many ways you, the user, can become your own threat when you inadvertently leak data. Imagine holding a bucket of water during a drought. You don't want anyone to come by and knock it out of your hands or grab some of it with a cup as they run by, but you also don't want to accidentally spill it because the tap is a long way away. The water in your bucket is like your data. You are part of the security protocol that needs to be put in place, because your own actions can sometimes facilitate an unwanted attack. Assessing your web connectivity will give you the tools to construct a personal cybersecurity framework comprised of standards, guidelines, and best practices to manage the inherent cyber-related risk you face. Where you spend your time, how you access online information, and the handling of your data are all going to play an important role in the security measures you take. Here are some questions you can reflect on to better understand your web connectivity. Connectivity considerations. What devices do you regularly use? Think about the machines you use to access the online world. Laptop? Personal tablet? Maybe you spend a lot of the day working from a big desktop computer in an office. Or perhaps you don't even have access to a computer at all. You just go about your business using the connective convenience of your smartphone. Once you identify the types of devices you rely upon, it becomes easier to address their specific weaknesses and formulate a more thorough security plan. For example, if you mainly work from your mobile device, you will need to pay particular attention to application security and the attack vectors that target wireless systems.
Desktop. Whether it's a PC or a Mac, make sure to protect your desktop by using anti-malware and by staying safe. Laptop. The portability of a laptop is a huge advantage, but it can come with its own security risks. Tablet. Tablets are mobile devices that help us to be productive as well as to relax, but they can be susceptible to hackers just like any other device. Smartphone. With over 3.5 billion smartphone users in the world, it's no wonder hackers target these devices. If you have one, make sure you know how to use it securely.
Where do you usually connect? Consider where you hang out. Maybe you are someone who enjoys working in a public place, like a cafe or library. Or perhaps you only access the internet while in a building where firewalls and IT experts are constantly monitoring the traffic on your network. Some private organizations have private networks of their own, reserved only for local traffic, which would make your security concerns in this area even less. How risky are your online activities? This is an important question because it offers a sense of the threat level you face from day to day. Maybe you are someone who enjoys a hearty dose of internet shopping each evening, throwing down your credit card on whatever site looks appealing. Or perhaps you like to cruise the darknet and check out blogs on NSA surveillance. Do you spend a lot of time tagging yourself and your actions on social media? While none of these activities are bad, they do all create some level of inherent risk. And to set up a decent security protocol for yourself, you will need to honestly assess how much risk you assume. What assets do you need to protect? Some people do absolutely everything online. Banking, communications, file sharing, shopping, travel planning, social media, all of these actions add up to a lot of contact with the online environment. In this landscape, what assets do you need to protect most? Obviously, your information as a whole is an asset that always needs safeguarding, but there are likely some other areas that also need vigilance. Perhaps the Google documents you work on each contain ultra-valuable trade secrets for work. Maybe your PayPal account carries a high balance. In both cases, password protection would be especially helpful in locking down overall access. Recognizing these areas as particularly valuable will give you the insight to offer them better guardianship. Optimizing your security approach. A personal approach to risk management takes the concepts of real-world protection and applies them to the cyber world. At the root level, there is no difference. It involves identifying risky areas of your life, ones that make you vulnerable in some way, and applying actions and solutions to ensure you are protected. The only real difference in the actions you take to protect yourself online will involve administrative and technical decisions rather than the normal real-life ones. To see this more clearly, let's examine the Capability Maturity Model, CMM, which was originally created to optimize a software development process by making it better and more effective. As an approach, it has since been adapted to other processes such as cybersecurity or any organizational process that needs to mature and develop over time. Let's apply this evolutionary method to our personal cybersecurity approach and see how it fits. The steps are not complicated or technical, just sensible. Initial step. This is the starting point for your new cybersecurity routine. During this time, you are developing strategies for boosting online protection, which may include changes to hardware and software, as well as implementation of certain precautionary measures like a VPN or port scanning. This beginning period is informal and may feel chaotic and unclear at times, dynamically changing to react and adapt to what's happening in the virtual environment. Think about a surgeon performing a new operation for the first time. The overall process and outcome are headed in the right direction, but may feel a little shaky because they are new. This is a time of learning, where negative outcomes such as a breach, or worse, a death, can offer lessons on immediate improvement. Repeatable step. This next step in the maturity of your cybersecurity plan relates to what worked. Identify the successful parts of the initial phase and repeat them with the hope of getting consistently positive results. If it's working, keep doing it. This action involves tracking progress and accurately identifying the strengths and weaknesses of your plan. Remember to look on the bright side. When you discover a problem, you also discover a weakness that can be addressed. Use this knowledge to strengthen your approach. Defined step. Although still in the development phase, things are getting easier at this point. You can likely define and document some key standards in the process, all of which can be improved over time. But your basic cybersecurity plan is in motion, and you are now working through repeating actions to test its mettle and become more competent in the process. When you enjoy moments of genuine online security, you should feel validated that your plan is working. Managed step. Your security approach has proven itself to be capable and effective, as is demonstrated through the safety you enjoy. The process itself has been tested through contact with different online environments, and you have likely refined and adapted it throughout. As a whole, your security approach has experienced varied conditions, some riskier than others, and you have hopefully been able to see improvements. Optimizing step. When it comes to cybersecurity, there is no end. There is no final step capable of unlocking complete safety and freedom. Hackers are always looking for new ways to access computer systems, just as you must always be looking for ways to protect them. Any security approach worth its salt demands ongoing improvements through technological solutions and understanding. It's worth noting that this is a difficult point to reach, and there are only a few companies in the world who have actually attained full optimization. If these steps feel like more security than you need, just take what works and leave the rest, perhaps until you find yourself in need of it. While this methodical approach is imperative for big companies whose livelihood depends on total cybersecurity, it still offers a lot of value to individuals whose efforts need the support of a clear and precise methodology. Having the full picture of exactly what it takes to achieve real cybersecurity is one of the biggest hurdles in the entire endeavor, and you are well on your way. set up a safety plan. Now that we have a clear aerial view of our plan, it's time to think about the security awareness training, or the formal educational process of digital protection required to make it real. In a corporate environment, a solid security awareness program should teach employees about the policies and procedures needed when working with IT problems and solutions. Again, these principles can be easily applied to a personal approach as well, especially in the way they educate users on how to handle security issues of all kinds. So, let's think about how we can apply this expertise to both home and school, all the while considering the unique situations of each environment and what we need to accomplish while there. School. If there's one place the internet has changed forever, it's the world of education. Everything you ever wanted to know, and some things you definitely didn't, are now at your fingertips any time of the day or night. For people who are not born or raised with this level of access and connectivity, such a realization can still be startling. Not so long ago, the only way to find information was to go to the library and look up a potential book, magazine, or newspaper that might contain your answer, using a card catalog with hundreds of drawers arranged in alphabetical order. And in each drawer were thousands of index cards that listed an item's physical location in the library. Once you found the card you thought you wanted, you then had to write down the information on a separate card or piece of paper, because the librarian better not see you taking the real one out of the catalog, and use your note to begin searching the stacks. Eventually, you found your book, and hopefully it had the information you were looking for. If not, it was back to the card catalog for another search. Nowadays, you might use an online catalog of some type for your research, or you might simply trust your searching capabilities for online materials. The amount of technology you're exposed to at school has a lot to do with your district's financial ability and its willingness to adopt new technologies. These days, most students have access to the internet at school and are often expected to utilize these conveniences to complete projects, create multimedia presentations, send email communications, research topics, and draft Word documents. This should not be a revelation. Here you are, taking an online class. STEM education has taken off in recent years, as it is based on the idea of teaching science, technology, engineering, and mathematics as an interdisciplinary approach to learning. This has not only revolutionized the way young people think about education, it has essentially opened them up to incredible possibilities of global understanding, creativity, and innovation. But sadly, this reality has also left them susceptible to online dangers. Because schools must find effective ways to protect their own sensitive data while still allowing young people the opportunity to access the internet for storing and creating information, online security awareness is key. Someday soon, kids will likely be learning cybersecurity right alongside the periodic table. But right now, as an individual user, you can learn a lot from a basic understanding of how to conduct your virtual life at school. Even though many parents, teachers, administrators, and government agencies work avidly to educate children about the dangers of the internet, the responsibility still ultimately rests on the person who is sitting in front of the screen. In all likelihood, your school already has many cybersecurity features in place, like a firewall and parental controls on the browser, but you are the guardian of your own data. So, here are some tips to remember while working on school computers. Try to do all of your school-related work on one specific computer. This can be challenging, but it will lessen any tampering with items you may have left on the desktop. Create a home base for yourself whenever possible. Don't leave any important documents or information on the computer desktop. This is essentially a public space where anyone can see, alter, or delete the contents.
Instead of leaving work on the desktop, create a file for yourself in a more private area, accessed under File Explorer, Windows, or Finder, Mac.
While there is still no guarantee of your data's complete security, it will keep the information quite a bit safer. You could also avoid this situation altogether by carrying a USB drive with you and monitoring it regularly to keep your files from getting corrupted by a virus. Don't access your social media at school. First of all, you are probably not supposed to.
Second of all, forgetting to completely log out of your account means whoever jumps on the computer next could have full access to your profile. In theory, they could be free to post images and communications on your page, send messages to your friends, or even mess with your privacy-related passwords and settings.
Shut down and restart your computer regularly. This helps install software running on the OS to reboot and perform the right automatic security updates. This step can remove bugs and keep the computer running smoothly and safely. Never make an online purchase or download free media. It goes without saying, this is just a bad idea. Not only is it a waste of school time, but it could very well leave your financial information open to attack and your computer open to malware. If you maintain a strictly professional relationship with your school computer, you will have fewer problems you need to explain later. While open networks are great for learning and sharing, they present real security threats. In 2017, dozens of colleges and learning institutions across the nation have been faced with data breaches. Even Stanford University was forced to issue an emergency notice to its students, urging them to update their passwords and security settings after the school's password database was hacked. Home. If you are like most young people, you probably know more about cybersecurity and the workings of the internet than many of the older people around, even your parents. So, it may fall on you to beef up the home security protocol to meet today's vigorous expectations. Using the knowledge found in this course will help you assess the overall security of your setup, but let's review some practical tips for how to approach a home wireless network. Basically, your home network connects to an internet access point, such as a cable from your ISP, to a wireless router, so all of your family's devices can connect quickly and simultaneously. Most of the time, this router is set up somewhere in the house and conveniently forgotten. As long as you can watch Netflix and play Fortnite, all is well in the virtual world. That's true, just as long as you remember the internet router in your home is one of the most important pieces of cybersecurity hardware you own. It is the gateway to the internet, to a giant network of users, to the world. Think about it this way. If you had a little door leading from your house into the busiest, craziest, most dangerous street you can possibly imagine, wouldn't you focus a lot of energy on keeping it tightly locked? Securing your Wi-Fi network is the same.
Click here to see some reminders.
Use a VPN. Activate encryption through the router's supported services. Change the generic SSID network name to a more personalized one. Turn off guest networks that give unauthorized people access to your services. Change your router's administrative username and password to something original. Make sure your router's internal network firewall is activated for an extra layer of protection. Check router settings every month to see if any updated security software or firmware has been issued. Turn off Wi-Fi Protected Setup, WPS, which can pair a stranger's device to your router if given physical access. Turn on invisibility status, or enable SSID broadcast so you don't broadcast the network name. Filter MAC addresses in router settings to ensure only the devices you want are allowed on your network. All others will be considered interlopers. If you have incredibly strong Wi-Fi, turn down the transmit power control so the signal doesn't reach areas outside the house where it's not needed. If you still don't think your personal commitment to cybersecurity matters much to the overall safety of the world, just remember the butterfly effect. As a scientific theory, it asserts that a single occurrence, no matter how small or seemingly insignificant, can change the course of the universe forever. While this statement might feel like an overdramatization of cyber risk, it's not far from the truth. Think about it this way. If everyone in the world followed the best practices in the cyberspace, the overall threat level would decrease significantly. One infected computer, somewhere thousands of miles from your own, has the power to negatively affect everyone's shared digital ecosphere. One computer virus, contracted through negligence or ignorance, can essentially spam the world with malicious emails and create a digital monster with an endless appetite for destruction. And even though you may have established firm defenses around your home system, we are all still connected via the shared network of the internet. As such, we are not just individuals floating out in cyberspace, but rather a community of users who must all work together to ensure the safety of our own valuable environment. Stay informed. Cybersecurity has never been hotter than it is right now. It's almost impossible to turn on the radio or the television without hearing something about data breaches and the need for increased knowledge and protection. According to Lloyd's of London, a leader in global insurance, an extreme cyber attack could cost the economic sphere upwards of $70 billion, which has roughly the same financial effect as a natural disaster. This could be as straightforward as a malicious attack on a cloud provider or a computer OS run by a business around the world. But the real kicker is the world's current lack of digital protection. While the demand for cyber insurance is growing, the majority of cyber losses are still not fully insured, leaving a gap of tens of billions of dollars. And as we know from the butterfly effect, when the insurance world gets hit hard, it only hikes up future rates for everyone. The good news is people are starting to take note of the digital risks we now face and to implement some degree of change. At the start of 2015, the United States announced a $25 million grant was being rolled out to support increased educational efforts in cybersecurity. This was a pivotal moment for virtual crime fighters because it acknowledged the government's commitment to fighting cyber attacks with solid financial investment. But the real future of cybersecurity lies in your hands and the hands of other young people. You will be the ones picking up cyberspace as it is now and improving it for the future. Emergency readiness. As concerned users, it is important to think about the cultural climate of the Internet, how it is changing, and what experts suggest for the future. Because online business, commerce, and connectivity rely on safe protocols, anything less would be negligence. In the United States, much of this expert responsibility rests on the Federal Department of Homeland Security, DHS, tasked with keeping the public safe through anti-terrorism measures, border security, immigration, disaster prevention, and yes, cybersecurity. As the youngest cabinet in the department, it was first created in response to the attacks on September 11, 2001, now known as 9/11. While there has not been an attack of equal significance in the United States since that time, many experts agree the digital landscape is likely to be the next site for such an assault, a suspicion well supported by the sheer number of cyber attacks reported every day by the media. Within the DHS, a department known as the U.S. Computer Emergency Readiness Team, U.S. CERT, is specifically dedicated to analyzing and reducing cyber threats and weaknesses, sharing cyber threat warning information with the public, and coordinating incident responses with other agencies. With an annual budget of $93 million, this division builds up their advanced digital analysis skills so they can turn their laser focus on any malicious activity they find, both in the United States and abroad. There are five areas of operations within this department which enable U.S. CERT to meet the challenge of keeping America and much of the world safe from cyber attack while proactively creating better ways to protect the rights of its citizens. Threat analysis. This area reviews, researches, vets, and documents all forms of cybersecurity and information assurance available in the government and beyond. This promotes quick responses in moments of digital crisis and allows any data to be read in terms of its nature, threat, and origin. Digital analytics. This area involves the process of examining information generated from businesses and their competition to drive continued online improvements. Practically speaking, this means looking closely at breached systems, using reverse engineering to trace malware, and learning more about hacking organizations based on the malicious code and digital signatures left behind. Operations. Operations is an area that facilitates the hardening of all cyber defenses and development of responses through informing the digital community about potential threats. When a breach of some kind is detected or occurs, operations will create a specially made product outlining the problem and a viable solution. Communications. This is a feature that supports the sharing, development, and web presence of cyber defense. It ensures that all parties get the information they need, right when they need it, to maintain effective collaboration and response. International capabilities. International capabilities allow the U.S. CERT to partner effectively with foreign governments and other entities to enhance global cybersecurity by building trust, improving relations, boosting collaboration, and agreeing on data sharing standards. Together, each of these features in the U.S. CERT bears some degree of responsibility in keeping the nation safe from digital threats, which, as you can imagine, is no small feat. To make this job easier, both for themselves and the outside community, they provide weekly bulletins summarizing new vulnerabilities and the patch information users need to protect their systems. These reports are pulled together by a collection of agencies, including NIST, DHS, and U.S. CERT, and provide the most up-to-date information on cyber threats and attacks. Interested parties can sign up to receive these security bulletins straight to their inbox, which is a great idea for anyone eager to learn more about today's threats and how they are being mitigated or reduced through information, collaboration, and a skillful approach. The service also offers a way to check out past vulnerability data as well. But brace yourself when opening these reports, as the lists of weaknesses and solutions can often run several pages, all of which are filled with highly detailed and technical terms. In general, these vulnerabilities are organized according to severity, high, medium, and low, as is determined by the Common Vulnerability Score System, CVSS, standard, which bases its findings on certain metrics. CVSS provides an open framework for communicating the nature and consequences of IT vulnerabilities, and it ensures users can accurately measure the seriousness of a threat while still seeing its underlying vulnerability characteristics. As a result, CVSS offers a standard measurement system for industries, organizations, and governments to use in prioritizing danger and formulating the most efficient response. If you have ever wondered how exactly an agency assesses risk and the actual metric systems they use, wonder no more. CVSS has established a base metric group that captures all the characteristics of a vulnerability that remain constant over different user environments. This is interesting because it really allows you to see how many of the concepts you just learned about can be practically applied to an actual cyber defense effort. Things like authentication, integrity, and access are not just cyber ideas floating out in the virtual world. They are legitimate tools for fighting back against cyber attacks and creating the best possible defense posture or position of readiness protection. Access vector. This metric shows you how a vulnerability is exploited through physical proximity. Local. Vulnerabilities exploited only through local access require the attacker to have physical access to the system or local account. Firewall or USB attacks. Local privilege escalations. Adjacent network. Vulnerabilities exploited through adjacent network access require the attacker to have access to the nearby broadcast, or to the part of the network connected by a shared medium where data packets might run into one another, also known as collision domain. Subnetworks, or networks divided into two or more. Bluetooth. Network. Vulnerabilities exploited with network access means the vulnerable software is bound to the network and the attacker does not need local access of any kind, sometimes called remotely exploitable. Buffer overflow. When a program tries to put more data in the physical memory storage than it is able to hold, causing overflow and overwriting. Authentication measures the number of times an attacker must prove their identity to a target in order to exploit a vulnerability. Multiple. The attacker must authenticate two or more times, even if it's with the same credentials. Single. An attacker must be logged into the system before exploiting the vulnerability. None. No authentication needed. Hopefully, you are beginning to see how each of these concepts can be used to create real, effective metric systems that have the power to measure and assess threats. Other metrics within this approach include the impact of availability, environment, data integrity, confidentiality, physical proximity of targets, remediation, or the process of making something better. You can apply these same digital principles to your own life by simply thinking about how each one impacts your data. The type of access you grant, the security environment you establish, and the degree of authentication you demand from others looking to get in are all practical and powerful ways to increase your defense posture and find true security in the digital world.
Knowledge check. Test your knowledge of new information by answering these questions and then review the feedback. Question 1. Which of the following is not a consideration when trying to protect your online connection? What kind of device you are connecting with? This is a security consideration because certain devices have specific weaknesses and vulnerabilities to be aware of. The location you are connecting from. This is a consideration because location usually determines the amount of security in the internet connection. A public location is likely to have weaker security, whereas a business is likely to have stronger security. The riskiness of your online activities. This is a security consideration because certain online activities are inherently risky and can leave you vulnerable to hackers. The battery level of your device. This is not an online security consideration because the battery level mainly affects the device itself, not the online connectivity. Question 2. Why is it risky to save a document to the desktop on a school computer? Because documents on the desktop are automatically uploaded to the internet. This is not true. Documents saved on the desktop are stored locally on the hard drive. They are not automatically uploaded to the internet. Because documents on the desktop are more susceptible to viruses. This is not necessarily true, as documents on the desktop are not any more vulnerable to being affected by viruses than other documents. Because documents on the desktop are visible to other users who could change or delete them. Saving documents in a more private area in the file system can make them less visible to other users. Because documents on the desktop are automatically encrypted. Documents on the desktop are not automatically encrypted, and even if they were, this would make them safer rather than riskier. Question 3. Jason's business has just had an incident where a server on one of their subnetworks was hacked by someone outside the business. What metric value does this attack have? Local. A local attack requires that the hacker have physical access to the system. Because this attack took place by a remote hacker, it is not considered local. Adjacent network. An adjacent network metric value refers to vulnerabilities that are exploited through shared network broadcasts, such as with subnetworks. Network. A network metric value refers to a vulnerability within software in the network, and it is remotely exploitable. Because this vulnerability was related to a subnetwork and not software within the network, it does not have a network metric value. Multiple. A multiple metric value refers to an attack that requires the hacker to authenticate two or more times. There was no mention of this in the scenario description, so it does not have a multiple metric value.
Conclusion. Recognizing online threats is one thing, but understanding the winding, complicated ways that hackers access private information is another thing entirely. Much like the tactics of real-life war, cyber attacks depend on shifting strategies to surprise and overtake their targets. Learning more about how malicious actors craft methods for invasion is useful for sure, but equally as important is the need to look inward at your own vulnerabilities and best practices. In order to beat hackers at their own game, you will need to understand the game much better. And that effort includes crafting a sensible security protocol for your own life.